Right now, coming up is the Space Show. Welcome to the Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I'm Andrew Rennie. On this evening's The Space Show, what are the plans to land humans on the lunar South Polar region? Well, Angelo De Grazia from the Space Association of Australia has some comments on that plan coming up in the show.
Let's take a trip to the moon. Come on, let's go for the moon. I wanna go to the moon. Let's take a trip to the moon.
Yes, so let's take a trip to the moon. There's going to be a new trip to the moon coming up in a few years' time, and we're going to have shortly Angelo De Grazia to talk about it. But first, let's look back more than 50 years to the day the world stood still. That's the day that Apollo 11 landed on the moon and they did the moonwalk. Well, this is a song by Tina Arena and the Australian Boys Choir. It was composed by Edmund Choi and it was used in the soundtrack for the movie The Dish, that fictional story, sort of truish fictional story about the Apollo 11 moonwalk. So here we go with The Day the World Stood Still.
Thank you.
That's Tina Arena and the Australian Boys Choir. Music from the movie The Dish. It's called The Day the World Stood Still. And we're going to be wondering shortly whether the world will stand still when they land on the moon again with the Artemis Project. But first,
you're listening to 88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
And we're welcoming now to our Southern FM Space Show studio, Angelo De Grazia from the Space Association of Australia. Welcome to the show, Angelo.
Well, thank you, Andrew. Happy to be here again.
Now, we did have you on the show earlier this year or this last year, I can't remember now, of talking about your trip to America to see the Artemis 1 launch. But something happened.
Exactly right. I was fortunate enough to go last year, the middle of August to about the middle of September, as part of the media contingent, and I was representing Southern FM. So that was pretty exciting times. I met a lot of people, including Bill Nelson, the administrator for NASA, Doug Hurley, astronaut who flew on the first manned mission of Crew Dragon, and a number of other people there. So it was very exciting.
While you were there, they didn't launch it.
No, they actually had two scrubs, and I was there for both of them, which was pretty unfortunate. So the time I was there, the first launch attempt was on the 29th of August, and the real Achilles heel to the launches was the two-hour launch window, because it clearly wasn't enough for them to resolve some of the issues that cropped up. So the first launch attempt was meant to be 8:30 in the morning. We got there about 1:30 in the morning into the media box to watch the launch. But there was some lightning that first morning that actually delayed fueling, and that started to eat into the 2 hours, obviously, launch window. Then they ended up with a hydrogen leak. Now, this has been pretty much the bane of the two scrubs, was hydrogen. Hydrogen is a very small molecule, very hard to contain it or to seal it. So they had that particular problem, and by the time the hydrogen on Artemis was fueled automatically, but they actually bypassed that, went into manual mode to overcome some of the hydrogen that was leaking out. By the time they did that and they fixed the problem, and they did fix it, they then had a sensor problem on one of the engines, and by that time the launch window had expired, so they had to stop. The second scrub was again hydrogen leak. They tried a manual override. I think they overpressurized some components, and they weren't able to seal the hydrogen leak.
Okay, now while you were in Florida twiddling your fingers waiting for the launch to happen, a guy called Daniel Kelly was in Yass, which is in New South Wales, and he wrote a parody making fun of the trouble NASA had in launching the Artemis 1 mission. It's called, and let's take a listen to this, it's called Just Can't Get It Up. The innuendo is obvious.
Seem to get it right, oh.
Angelo, NASA eventually did get Artemis 1 up. What happened?
Well, after the Scrub 2, they decided that they were going to fix the quick disconnect umbilical, and they were going to fix it on the pad, and they fixed it up. But then a hurricane came along, Hurricane Ian. So they rolled the stack back into the VAB, and they basically gave them the chance to fix some of the renewables, like batteries, and they also fixed the flight termination system, and it finally went out to the pad middle of November and was a very successful launch after that.
Okay. Now, that proved the way towards the follow-up missions, now, which haven't happened yet, of course. Here is an extract from a press conference about it.
With Artemis 1, we set out to prove that the hardware was ready, that SLS was prepared to launch our astronauts skyward, that Orion was equipped to carry them to the moon and back safely again. Artemis 1 was a resounding success, and Artemis 2 will leverage that by putting humans in the loop, executing operations in the critical path, leading to new footprints on the lunar surface.
So what's next for Artemis, Angelo?
Well, Artemis 2 is coming up, and that's a crew of four, three American NASA astronauts, one of which I met, which was Glover. I met him at the Scrub launch, and the other is a Canadian astronaut. So three astronauts, and it'll be essentially an Apollo 13 mission. It's called a hybrid free return trajectory that's being used. They slowly lift their orbit from Earth orbit to lunar orbit, and then they do a swing around the moon and come back to Earth.
But they don't go into orbit around the moon.
They do not go into orbit. That and no, and that's scheduled for the end of 24. But it looks like, because they're working a few problems at the moment, it looks like it's probably going to go into early 25.
And that's not landing on the moon at all?
Not at all.
Okay. Now, Artemis 3 is the moon landing one.
Correct.
And here is how NASA described it earlier in the year in a press release.
Humans have always been drawn to explore, discover, and learn as much as we can about the world and worlds around us. This isn't always easy, but it's in our nature. For the benefit of all humanity, NASA and its partners will land the first woman on the surface of the moon with Artemis. Following two Artemis test missions, Artemis 3, currently planned for 2025, will mark humanity's first return to the lunar surface in more than 50 years. NASA will make history by sending the first humans to explore the region near the lunar South Pole. On the way, NASA's Orion spacecraft will be the crew's ride to and from Earth and into and out of lunar orbit. Orion is the only spacecraft capable of returning crews to Earth at lunar re-entry velocities. On the successful Artemis I mission, Orion's uniquely designed heat shield was recently tested under these extreme re-entry conditions. Four astronauts will depart from Launch Pad 39B at Kennedy Space Center in Florida atop the Space Launch System, the only rocket powerful enough to send Orion, its crew, and their supplies to the moon in a single launch. The crew will be selected from among the most diverse astronaut corps in history, each equipped with unique skills and intensively trained. First, the crew will launch to Earth orbit, where they will perform systems checks and solar panel adjustments on Orion. Then, a powerful push from the Space Launch System's interim cryogenic propulsion stage will help Orion perform a translunar injection maneuver, setting its course to the moon. For several days, the crew will travel toward the moon and perform corrective engine burns to intercept the moon's gravitational field. At the right time and location, Orion will perform a series of two engine burns to place the spacecraft in a lunar near rectilinear halo orbit. From hundreds of potential orbits, NASA selected near rectilinear halo orbit to achieve long-term Artemis goals. NRHO will provide near-constant communications with Earth and access to sites all over the moon. Because it is gravitationally balanced between Earth and the moon, this orbit will maximize fuel efficiency. On future missions, NASA and its partners will assemble the Gateway Lunar Space Station in near rectilinear halo orbit to serve as a hub for Artemis missions. NASA has selected SpaceX to provide the human landing system that will transport Artemis 3 astronauts from Orion in lunar orbit to the surface of the Moon and back again. SpaceX plans to use a unique concept of operations to increase the overall efficiency of their lander. After a series of tests, SpaceX will fly at least one uncrewed demo mission that lands Starship on the lunar surface. When Starship has met all of NASA's requirements and high standards for crew safety, it will be ready for its first Artemis mission. Before the crew launch, SpaceX will launch a storage depot to Earth orbit. A series of reusable tankers will carry propellant to the storage depot to fuel the human landing system. The uncrewed Starship human landing system will then launch to Earth orbit and rendezvous with the storage depot to fill its tanks before executing a translunar injection engine burn and traveling approximately 6 days to near rectilinear halo orbit, where it will await the Artemis 3 crew. When both spacecraft have arrived in near rectilinear halo orbit, Orion will dock with the Starship human landing system in preparation for the first lunar surface expedition of the 21st century. Once the crew and their supplies are ready, two astronauts will board Starship and two will remain in Orion. Orion will undock and back away from Starship to remain in near rectilinear halo orbit for roughly one orbit around the Moon, lasting about 6.5 days. This will match the length of the surface expedition, so as Orion completes its orbit, the two-person surface crew will finish their work on the surface in time to launch back up to meet the spacecraft. NASA has its sights set on locations around the South Pole for the Artemis era of human lunar exploration. Extreme, contrasting conditions make it a challenging location for Earthlings to land, live, and work, but the region's unique characteristics hold promise for unprecedented deep space scientific discoveries. Using advanced technology, including autonomous systems, the crew inside of Starship will land at a carefully selected site within a 100-meter radius. On the Moon after touchdown, the surface crew's first task will be to ensure all systems are ready for their lunar surface stay. Then they will rest, eat, and recharge for the first full day of the expedition. During their time on the Moon, the astronauts will do scientific work inside Starship and conduct a series of moonwalks, exiting Starship to explore the surface. The astronauts will don advanced spacesuits, exit through an airlock, and descend on Starship's lift. NASA has selected AXIOM Space to provide the Artemis 3 surface suits and spacewalk systems. These suits will give the astronauts increased range of motion and flexibility to explore more of the landscape than on previous lunar missions. During their moonwalks, the astronauts will take pictures and video, survey geology, retrieve samples, and collect other data to meet specific scientific objectives. The view from the lunar South Pole region will look very different from the photos taken on Apollo missions in the Moon's equatorial region. The sun will hover just above the horizon, casting long, dark shadows across the terrain, which the crew will explore using headlamps and navigational tools. The information and materials collected by Artemis 3 astronauts will increase our understanding of the mysterious South Pole region, the Moon, and our solar system. Mission control teams on the ground will be in contact with the crew as they relay what they see, hear, and feel. Through mission coverage and the ability to send high-quality images and video to the ground with advanced communication technology, they will be sharing a unique new human experience with the world. On the journey home, when their surface expedition is complete, the two astronauts will lift off the surface of the Moon and head back to near rectilinear halo orbit in Starship to reunite with their crewmates in Orion. After docking, the crew will spend up to 5 days in orbit, transferring samples between the vehicles and preparing for the journey back to Earth. When they reach the optimal near rectilinear halo orbit departure point, with all four astronauts back in Orion, they will undock and ignite Orion's engines, slinging the spacecraft past the Moon and allowing it to coast toward Earth. At the end of their long fall towards Earth, the crew will be traveling at about 40,000 kilometers per hour during re-entry into Earth's atmosphere. Assisted by 11 parachutes, The spacecraft will splash down in the Pacific Ocean, where it and the crew will be retrieved with support from the United States Coast Guard and United States Navy. Artemis III will be one of the most complex undertakings of engineering and human ingenuity in the history of deep space exploration to date. The astronauts' observations, samples, and data collected will expand our understanding of our solar system and home planet, while inspiring the next generation. This mission will usher in a future in which humans consistently access the moon, and human planetary exploration missions are within reach. Each Artemis mission will increase our knowledge, refine our operations, and prove our technology as we prepare for the first human mission to Mars.
Well, that's the plan for Artemis III, the first human landing on the moon since the Apollo days.
88.3 Southern FM.
Where you are listening to The Space Show. And we are with Angelo De Grazia from the Space Association of Australia, which presents this radio program for Southern FM. And he's been listening to that feature about how Artemis III plans to land people on the moon. Well, Angelo, what do you think are the good points about the plan?
Well, clearly the first...
Whoops, sorry, my apologies. I didn't turn your mic on. There you go.
Okay. The first good thing is clearly it's we're going back to the moon after 50 years. So that's fantastic. That's a good thing. It's also a value for money. It's part of the private-public partnership with NASA. It was a $2.9 billion original contract to develop the Starship human landing system versus the Blue Origin, which has also recently won a bid. But at that time, it was compared to $6 billion lander. It was awarded to SpaceX. Now, SpaceX, as you know, is probably the most dynamic and innovative aerospace company around, and it has a proven track record. So if you're going to put some money on it, SpaceX are the ones you put your money on. The Starship itself is a huge volume. It's 1,000 cubic metres, basically. The ISS is 950 cubic metres, so it's one space station landing on the moon. It's got a huge payload, 100 tonnes to lunar surface. Apollo LEM, in contrast, was a 15-tonne machine. So it uses modern leading-edge technology. Unlike the Space Launch System, which is shuttle-derived, this is all the latest and U-boot technology that SpaceX can muster. It uses methane and liquid oxygen. It's easier to deal with than dealing with hydrogen, as we found out when we scrubbed the launches from Artemis. It uses engines that are very well developed. The Raptor engines are now in version 3, and they are high-performance, well-proven engines, and they will only get better. The important thing is you buy the human landing system and you buy Mars, because once you've achieved the human landing, Mars is not that far away in terms of the framework and the system of Space Launch System, Starship, and its ability to basically go around the solar system. As Nelson said, the administrator of NASA, high risk leads to high reward.
Mm-hmm. And any other good points?
No, I think that's probably the major ones.
Okay, as I look at it, I see a whole lot of bad points as well. Tell me about some of them.
Okay, as we know, a human landing system is a Starship variant. So it's the problem with the human landing system is it depends on the development of Starship, and herein lies its big Achilles heel.
Perhaps you should explain to us what Starship is.
Okay, what we've got is we've got two parts to it. We've got a super heavy, which is the booster component, and we have the Starship top bit, which has various variants, one of which is a human landing system. Another one is a tanker mode. Another one is a satellite delivery mode. So those two combined we call Starship, the Starship system. But the Starship usually refers to the top bit that does the transporting of things. So the development's been a bit of a problem. It had a first launch attempt in April, and things didn't go quite well. It dug a bit of a hole in the launch pad and sent concrete flying everywhere. And it Lab Padre Island, which is not far from Boca Chica, where it was launched, was getting sand debris coming down on it. And that made the the FAA, Aeronautics Agency, the regulatory body, very upset. And they basically grounded Starship. And so they came up with a plan with SpaceX working together. They came up with 63 fixes that were required. Starship did extensive work to get that those fixes. SpaceX announced in September that they'd fixed all those 63 issues. However, the FAA has still not given a license. They're still reviewing it. But what's most important is that they've recruited the Fish and Wildlife Service to provide them feedback about the pad modifications, including the water deluge system, which means that we're in the hands of the regulatory systems. Elon's kind of getting a little bit upset about it all, but he shouldn't have launched in April in what basically became a bit of a botched launch. And now the regulatory people are on top of him. So
the water deluge system is designed to keep the pad cool, isn't it?
Correct.
And also to suppress noise.
Not only does it keep the pad cool, but it also prevents the exhaust from blowing a hole into the base. The original April launch, the rocket just basically exhausted onto concrete, and that concrete just was eaten away by the exhaust plume, very hot. Very intense pressures, and it dug a hole in the launch pad. And that was a disaster. Elon did say at one point that he thought one of his biggest regrets was not putting a flame trench, for want of a better word. And yes, that was a regret. And so they came up with this water deluge system. Very innovative. It looks like it's going to work. But we need to fly this thing. Now, Elon thinks he'll be flying in October.
That's this month?
This month, very unlikely. This may not launch till next year. Now, what that has is an ongoing effect, because if you can't fly the rocket, you can't develop the human landing system, let alone the booster system for that rocket. Now, the booster system is required to not just get the human landing system in orbit, but also to get tankers into orbit. It turns out, for Artemis 3 to be successful, and you heard it on the promo, you have to actually refuel in orbit. It turns out you might have to have 4 to 10 launches of a tanker before you have enough fuel to fill up the human landing system. So
that was an approach that was considered for Apollo, but abandoned, rejected.
I wonder why. So here we have a situation where not only do we have to get a rocket and a human landing system in orbit, but we've also got to test out this refueling in space. It's never been done before to this scale. Now, luckily, we're using methane and liquid oxygen, and Blue Origin, who are also building a alternate lander, they'll be using hydrogen, and they're still refueling in space. So, you know, they've got a bigger problem, but it doesn't understate the problem that SpaceX are going to have. So we've not done that. So that's that's the key concern: the development of the human landing system, the development of a tanker system. Now, once you get to the moon, now remember, they've also got to provide a full-blown human landing system landing on the moon before NASA, uncrewed, before NASA will qualify the thing for a crewed flight, which means they were going to have to fly next year. They're not going to be ready.
Right. We've got a little clip about that. Again, an issue raised in a press conference.
Our next question is from Manuel Manzanti from Debate. I wonder that given that you took the decision along with SpaceX of these 13 places, I wonder, is it safe to assume that the first HLS demo flight will land in one of these places?
The uncrewed demo flight, yeah, great question. We have a different arrangement for the uncrewed demo flight. SpaceX will actually lead the selection of where they land on the uncrewed mission. We have asked them, they will land at a center location between 84 and 90 degrees, so again, within 6 degrees of the South Pole, but they will lead the selection. They may or may not use the same set of constraints, and they will make the primary selection, and they will coordinate a course for us, so we may iterate on it, but that's their responsibility. It will likely not be one of these 13 sites, but in the same region, and they're not required to use one of these 13 sites.
Well, Angelo, demo flight?
Okay, the demo flight was scheduled for next year. It is unlikely that that's going to happen because of the development timeframe, which puts, you know, the unlikely case of 2025 landing. A 2026 landing is possible, but they've got to get over the regulatory issue and the development. The other risks, of course, are, you know, the actual technical parts of getting the rocket to work, hot staging, and a few other bits and pieces. Refueling in low Earth orbit, as we said, is never been tried before. It's going to be a big risk. It'll need 6 to 10 flights potentially to refuel. So it needs a successful demo flight before NASA will commit astronauts on board. One of the issues with landing on the moon was there's because they've got Raptor engines and they'll be firing, probably one engine, or maybe two will be firing as they land, the concern is that they'll crater the landing site. So what the early designs of HLS, SpaceX one, is to have engines at the top of the rocket that will ignite just before landing so that they can switch off the bottom engines and the top engines basically ease the rocket down. I've not heard of any of developments that are going on with those engines. I know SpaceX may be working on it, but we've not heard anything. But that's a risk. That's a new engine that needs to be developed. It could be the Raptor engine, but I don't know. So the whole thing is pretty risky.
During the Apollo mission, there was very little, if any, cratering by the descent engine on the lunar module, and the engine bell of that came within 30 centimetres or less of the surface, and it wasn't a problem. So.
Yeah, but the engine actually cut out higher than that. The engine actually, for the Apollo, they actually dropped, I forget how much it was.
Yeah, 2 or 3 metres.
Yeah. So they actually dropped, and that's why there's suspension on the limb. This one here, without shadow of a doubt, the Raptors are on the bottom of the human landing system. They would potentially crater, because if you actually see the pictures, the engines are very close to the bottom of the legs. Now, you know, the bigger the legs, the more weight you carry, the more complexity you carry.
Yeah, another thing about the design, it looks like a 1950s. I'm holding here in front of me now, the listeners can see it, a pencil. And you try and balance a pencil on a bench and it doesn't need much to tip it over.
No, but
now, the Apollo lunar module could take a slope of up to 20 degrees or thereabouts before it couldn't take off. It wouldn't tip over at that, even at great angles, but it couldn't safely take off. But with such a long spaceship, how much latitude do they have in tilt on the on the surface?
I would imagine it'd be slightly less than the lunar module, but you've got to remember they have 6 engines, and they may even have more than that on the human landing system. I haven't had that confirmed. So it'll be bottom heavy in any case. And the first HLS will only have a couple of decks fitted out at the top. So it'll be very light at the top. But nonetheless, you make a good point. What's its tilt out angle? I don't know. The lunar module was very tolerant to significant tilt. I think you said
20%? 20 degrees.
20 degrees, 20 sorry.
Degrees, yes.
Yeah. I don't know, but you're right. It's an issue.
Okay. What about the return to Earth? In Apollo, if they took off, there was a command module coming past every 2 hours. Now, with the Orion command module, if you like to call it that, in rectilinear orbit, its period is 6 days or thereabouts.
But,
and so you're only going to get a fly past every 6 days.
Yeah, but you heard, first off, when they land on the moon, they're committed to 6 days. Reason? For that very reason. They actually synchronize the liftoff from the lunar surface to coincide with the Orion capsule coming back around so that they can dock relatively quickly in its orbit. But they have to time it based on the orbit of the Halo rectilinear orbit, yeah.
Yes. See, in Apollo, they could have lifted off even if it wasn't the 2 hours. They rendezvous in lunar orbit was could have been done quite quickly and easily. But to have to wait 6 days...
Oh, yeah, but you have to... But that gives them, you know, they've got four EVAs planned in Artemis 3. But you also got to remember, it's got fuel margin. So even if it missed the first orbit... it would get it on the second orbit. I'm sure the HLS will be designed to sustain astronauts for, you know, maybe, you know, 20 days. It's got a lot of fuel margin, a lot of probably consumables and environmental systems that, you know, it's a big rocket. You can do a lot. First time ever, we don't have to worry about weight and size of things, because Starship is just so big.
Well, any other points you need to make in the last minute of the show?
Well, I guess the only point is that NASA is being very optimistic. I think the timelines are going to stretch out. But one thing that I feel, and Andrew, I think we spoke about that some another time, but... the NASA, if you recall Apollo, and you do, NASA were everywhere. They were doing all sorts of things concurrently, and things were happening left, right, and centre. This Artemis program just doesn't seem to have that inertia, that momentum, and that worries me. It means that if they've forgotten something, or if NASA overly relies on its private partners... things may go astray quickly. So that's my only comment.
Okay. Well, thank you, Angelo, for joining us on The Space Show. And we'll look forward to future Artemis missions.
Thank you, Andrew.
This has been The Space Show. Coming up, Nick Black and Purple Haze.